things that evoke emotional responses from different sectors of our county. On last week's show, we talked with Albion resident and forest activist Linda Perkins and with Mendocino County Attorney Rod Jones, who is representing the Albion Watershed Association in a lawsuit against Mendocino Redwood Company. In the interest of offering the full scope of dialogue, today's guest is Sandy Dean, president of Mendocino Redwood Company, whose office is in Calpella. So good morning, Sandy. Thank you for being on the show. Welcome to KZYX and Z.
Good morning, Linda, and thank you for allowing me to come on your show this morning.
Yeah, so Mendocino Redwood Company has been here for about a year. What are the operating principles the company has established over this last year?
Well, actually, we're just about 9 months old. And when we started in business last May, and as we've been talking with folks in the community over the last 9 months, from our official start date in June 30 of last year, we've been talking about a relatively simple guiding principle for what we're trying to accomplish. And that is the idea of managing productive forest lands with a high standard of environmental stewardship and at the same time operating as a successful business. And that is really the single thing that guides what we try to accomplish every day.
Okay, and would you say that that you conduct business differently than your predecessor? And if so, how?
I think we do, although I think spending a lot of time comparing what we do versus our predecessor is not necessarily the best way to gauge how we're doing. I think we have to look at what we're doing in an absolute sense. And we're doing a whole bunch of things, I think, that are really speak to our commitment towards the purpose that we've talked about, managing productive forest lands with a high standard of stewardship and at the same time operating as a successful business. Some of the things that would fall into that category would be the lower level of harvest that we're operating at, and in particular, the fact that our harvest rate is we estimate 60% of a conservative estimate of the growth of the forest. That means that the forest is going to have more trees, bigger trees, each year as time goes by because our harvest rate is less than what the forest is growing. That's one thing that we're doing. A second thing that we're doing that I think is really quite different than our predecessor is our pursuit of Forest Stewardship Council certification. And for those who are not familiar with the concept, certification is the idea of having an independent third party review, assess, and hopefully validate exemplary practices for forestry in the woods. And the FSC, the Forest Stewardship Council, was formed in 1993 with the support of a whole bunch of really prominent environmental organizations. And the FSC, once it was formed, developed several, I think it's 10, principles that if a company can meet the principles, then they can be deemed to be certified for good forestry practices. And to the extent people want to learn about the FSC, they can go to a website that they have, which is www.fscus.org. And we're not certified yet, but we're working to get certified, and I think that's probably the most tangible thing that we can be doing to demonstrate our commitment to doing the right thing in the woods for the long term.
Do you have a time frame that you believe that will come about?
Well, we're quite hopeful that would happen this year, but it isn't really entirely up to us because certification is an independent third-party process, so a lot of it depends on the certifier.
How about state regulations? Do you believe the state adequately protects forest resources?
That's a good question.
It was actually given to me by someone else. I can't take credit for it.
Yeah, I guess I would say for us, we're really looking to manage our land to a standard that is our own standard, which I expect will likely exceed the state forestry regulations. And I think that's how we're going to approach this. We're really trying to say, what can we do today to put in place practices that will result in us having a much better forest 2, 3, 4, and 5 decades from now? And that's a little bit different way of thinking about it, as opposed to saying, how do we just meet the minimum rules that the state sets forth?
Do you think those minimum rules are adequate? If people did meet those minimum rules, do you think it would be adequate?
Yeah. Well, I think then we have to get down to talking about rule by rule. I'm sure there are cases where the rules are not achieving all of the results that were hoped for. Yeah.
Okay. And in that same vein, the coho salmon population, as I believe everyone would agree, has declined drastically. What do you see being the cause of that?
Well, the coho salmon is a complicated issue. There's no question that the coho is in trouble, and we want to do all that we can to try and work to protect the coho that we have left, and to, more importantly, to work to create habitat so that hopefully we can have a lot more coho in the future. I'm sure that logging practices over the last 50 years have had an impact on the coho. So too has fishing, so too has agriculture. There's a lot of things that work here. So too has there's a 20-year cycle of ocean temperature and currents that has had an impact on the coho. So it's hard to isolate it. What we're going to do is make sure that we do the most we can to help restore and protect coho habitat.
Okay. And when we talked earlier last week, in regard to the show that was on last week, and I think you've had a chance to review that show, you said that there were misrepresentations made, inaccurate information that was given. Can you talk about those things that you dispute?
Actually, I did not have a chance to review the show from last week, so all that I know about it is secondhand. I do think that there was quite a bit of discussion about, I'm going to guess, the Clearbrook timber harvest plan, and I think is that accurate?
That sure, the Albion area primarily is what we talked about. Yeah,
and I guess, you know, there's a specific harvest plan in the Albion that we are being sued on right now, and I think that probably to give some of the basics on that harvest plan might be worthwhile. We have a plan called the Clearbrook plan. It's a 218-acre plan, of which there's 114 acres of single tree selection harvesting. Single tree selection harvesting means that we, out of a clump of trees, we'll take a couple trees and we'll leave a few trees. In this case, the 114 acres of single tree selection harvesting, we're retaining roughly 60% of what was there originally. So we're leaving more than we're taking. And I think that's probably, by most people's accounts, single tree selection harvesting is something that's preferred over most alternatives. The second piece of the plan is 104 acres of group selection harvesting. Group selection is basically very small patch harvest units, 2.5 acres generally is the limit to how big they can be, and they're scattered around a larger area. In this case, 104 acres of group selection, 20 acres will be harvested in, I'm going to presume it must be 8 or 10 harvest units, and 80 acres won't be harvested at all. Or maybe we were going to take a few tan oak out of some of the acres because we thought that might improve the stand. In the Clearbrook plan, there's no cutting of trees that are greater than 48 inches in diameter and that appear to be 250 years old or older. There's no harvesting in a Class 1 watercourse protection zone. There's harvesting in one Class 2 where we take a few trees out in an effort to improve the stand. There's a bunch of rock rolling dips being installed. There's a little bit of culvert work being done. And most of the plan is going to be cable yarded. If all of our plans could be a combination of single tree selection and group selection, we would love that. There are places in our forest where that won't accomplish what we hope to do in terms of starting the next generation of a conifer forest, and so it's not always available to us. But here we have the stocking to do what we think of as being very good forestry.
Now, according to your old growth policy, and you referenced it just then, you're not going to log trees that are 250 years of age or greater and 48 inches in diameter or greater.
Well, that's what's being done on the Clearbrook plan.
Mm-hmm. How is your company determining the age of residual old growth trees, and specifically in your amendment of the 1995 Barn Gulch Plan in Greenwood Creek? What method do you use for determining the age of the trees?
Well, it depends on the tree. If it's there's a way to core a tree, which is basically drilling a very small hole into the tree. It's smaller than the size of a pencil, and out of that you're able to pull a very small portion of, you pull out what looks like a pencil, literally, and you can count the rings, and that gives you an indication for age. And that's that's the best way to determine the age of a tree while it's still standing. So that's how we would do that.
And do you have, I know last time we talked, you were in the process of conducting an inventory of your lands. Do you know how many old growth trees that meet this definition do you have on your property?
We don't know that. The re-inventory of our property is something that's going to be a five-year process. And inventorying, our lands are 235,000 acres. That's 350 square miles. Trying to accurately assess how much standing timber volume we have on that is a very big undertaking. And we want to make sure that the results that we get out of that are accurate. So that process began last year, but we won't have meaningful information on that for a little while.
Okay, we are talking with Sandy Dean, president of Mendocino Redwood Company. This is the Monday Morning Public Affairs Show, and I'm your host, Linda McClure. We will start taking call-ins. Our number is 895-2448 and 1-800-499-7117.
And Linda, while we're waiting, I should probably clarify this on old growth. Our old growth policy is put forth on our web, on our internet site, and we've tried to be as clear as we can. In the case of both the Barn Gulch Plan and also the Clearbrook Plan, we're going beyond the policy in basically trying to find and identify every 48-inch tree that might be 250 years old or older and not harvest it. And so that's something that we've done specifically for these plans in an effort to try and see what happens when we do that.
Okay, good. Thanks for that clarification. And we do have calls coming in. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I don't have any big solutions, but maybe one small step towards transparency of your timber operations might be to open up the woods again to firewood collection. And I wanted to know your opinion, your take on that. The classic reason in the past by your previous owner was, liability, though they had allowed it, the previous owner before that had allowed firewood collection for years and years and years. And certainly it's a good use of the tan oak. And I'd like to know if you would consider that, if you have any position on that, what it might be in the future. And, there's one old timer around here I thought had a wonderful plan for the forest, which was to harvest only old growth trees. And what would be your response to that? Certainly that would control the take in the woods. So I'll take my question on the air.
Sure. And what's the caller's first name?
He didn't give it.
He didn't give it. Okay. Well, the idea of firewood cutting, if we we would love, it's a great question, and I would love to find a way where we could do that. The biggest challenge is the liability issue, because firewood cutting is dangerous. And if we let somebody on our land to cut firewood and they injure themselves, while common sense would sort of seem like we wouldn't have much to do with it, we would have a very large legal exposure. And if we could find a way to allow people to come on our lands where we had some confidence that they would be responsible for their own actions, we would love to be able to allow the members of the community to do that. So far, when I've talked to attorneys, I haven't been able to get a satisfactory answer to that challenge. On the idea of harvest only old growth, that's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer for that off the top of my head.
Okay, that's how it is with call-in shows. We never quite know what we're going to be getting. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, Linda. This is Rod Jones calling.
Hi, Rod.
Hi, I'm the attorney for the Albion River Watershed Protection Association, and we're at the moment kind of engaged in some battle with MRC, it looks like, on this Clearbrook plan. And in my office with me is Linda Perkins, and we're, of course, listening very closely to what Mr. Dean has to say. And I guess I would say, number one, we're a little bit distressed that once again Mendocino Redwood Company gets so much so-called equal time, if there was something specifically erroneous or wrong about anything that Linda and I said last week, we certainly would have expected that Mr. Dean would come on the air and have something specific to say about it. We don't hear that. And I guess I'm troubled about the radio station allowing so much free airtime to a large corporation with people with a lot of money to be able to, again, put a spin on things and make it look like they are indeed the best stewards that ever came into Mendocino County. I'm troubled by that. I just want to indicate that. More importantly, an awful lot's being missed in this, and I'm troubled about that. There's a lot of vague generalities being used that I don't think are getting us down to the central question. In the Clear Book plan, for example, it was pretty clear that somehow information got available to Mendocino Redwood Company that was not available to the public, that allowed them, knowing this plan was going to be contested, probably end up in court, to bring in a good-sized crew of fallers. Now, they say it wasn't a double crew, whatever that means. They said it wasn't that many, but they brought a bunch of people in to start falling trees. They gave notice the very day that the plan was approved. They were in the woods the next day falling trees, knowing that they had a couple of weeks to fall trees before they had to start calling for northern spotted owl. Of course, if you fall a number of trees, you probably take away the residences of the owls. So when you go back to call, they're likely not to be there anymore. And I guess I would like some specifics from Mr. Dean. How did Mendocino Redwood Company know and be able to so closely and carefully tailor their operations that they could get in with so many fallers the very day after approval of the plan and effectively harm the public in terms of its ability to get an injunction to stop them from doing that if the public believed that plan was improperly approved?
Okay. Sandy, do you have a response for that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know specifically the mechanics of how we got notified that the plan was approved, but I know that that plan was pending approval for a long time. We'd been expecting it to be approved for a couple of weeks, and we were awaiting its approval because we did want to begin the falling process so that when April 1st came and it was dry enough to begin to haul logs, we'd have some logs to haul. So there was definitely a crew of fallers that was scheduled to come into there probably at the beginning of February or maybe even the middle of January, who'd been waiting around for the approval from CDF. And that's why they were able to go ahead and start falling when they did.
You mean there were a number of fallers just kind of sitting around twiddling their thumbs for days on end, waiting to hear from CDF? They were doing nothing else. They had no other work whatsoever.
Well, actually, most of the fallers don't work a lot during the winter. And so I don't know the specifics, but I think the case was that those fallers were scheduled to go into the Clear Book area and had been scheduled to do that since probably mid-January.
Okay, and the director's decision came out on the 17th of February. The public didn't even get a copy in the mail until the earliest, the 18th, but Mendocino Redwood Company knew on the 17th and sent its letter in telling CDF, we're starting the next morning. How do you explain such great timing?
Rod, I don't know the mechanics of how CDF notifies us that they've approved the plan.
Well,
so
you've got the same documents. I've got the letter from your forester. You've got the letter. You've seen the documents. How do you explain the great impeccable timing that you had on this plan?
Again,
go in and start falling trees the day after there's approval, before the public even learns there's approval.
Again, I don't know the specifics of how CDF notifies us that a plan has been approved, so I can't answer the question.
Okay, let's talk about Mendocino Redwood Company. Did you have somebody calling CDF every morning, every afternoon, saying approval, approval?
It wouldn't surprise me when we have a crew of fallers that are waiting to go work on a plan, as somebody did check with CDF periodically to see when the plan might be approved.
Okay, that probably makes sense. Linda's here as well.
We have another call, so if there's another question you have, then we'd like to finish it so we can take some other calls, too. Does Linda or Rod have anything more they'd like to add?
I would like to say that Sandy has said one of the things I picked up, one of many things, is that he said that the harvest rate is 60% of the growth rate. And I know that the company, based on what Louisiana Pacific did, has an inventory ownership-wide of their lands. They don't have an inventory watershed by watershed. So I wonder how Sandy knows that he isn't overcutting in the Albion, because he doesn't have an inventory. He doesn't know at what rate he's cutting in the Albion. Or in Creek, for that matter.
The inventory that was done in 1993 does estimate timber volumes by watershed. And we have a rough estimate that there's something on the order of 300 million board feet in the Albion. And we're talking about harvesting roughly 8 million feet from the Albion this year, which is, I don't know, 2.5 or 2.6 or 2.7%. I don't have a check there in front of me. And we would look at that and say that's probably at or below the growth rate of the Albion. So I think we do have some pretty good general figures to make some judgments about that.
Okay, that was the question. That was the answer. Thank you.
Okay. And let's go on to another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Brian Clark, and I've been a contract logger on the Mendocino Coast for, well, off and on close to 20 years. And I would have to say that I'm generally quite appreciative of the changes that MRC is making in their forestry practices over what had come down with LP and before that masonite. I find the continued almost mechanical adversarial reactions of the environmental community rather comical and often sad. I feel that the main voices of the environmental community, especially people like Rod Jones, have lost a great deal of their credibility by the continued adversarial stance rather than investigative stance that they've taken towards logging of all sorts in Mendocino Coast, including the small sort of mom and pop shows that were going on, raising sinker logs in the Noyo and Albion and Navarro watersheds. I think it's way more productive for people to look at the overall history of logging and assess the damage that's been done to the ground and watersheds over a 100-year cycle rather than a 10 or 5-year cycle. The amount of sediment that's been pushed into the watersheds of this county is tremendous, and as a logger, somebody who's done remediation work for all of my professional life, I can see that the huge bulk of the sediments that are moving down our watersheds were put in before 1970, and a great deal of it, the bulk of it was from the 50s. But even before that, with the river drives that scoured the banks and moved millions of yards of dirt down the creek, dirt that's still there, it hasn't been flushed out, it won't be flushed out for 100 years. People should realize that the current practices of road maintenance and winterization of roads and culvert size requirements and skid trail water barring are making a huge difference, as well as the streamside buffer zones and things of that nature.
What is your assessment of the coho salmon?
Well, I have a friend who, I'll tell you an assessment. I have a friend who ran a hatchery on the 10 Mile River for coho, steelhead, and king salmon. And he spent a lot of time on the river catching fish, looking at the fish, and there's a lot of fish in the 10 Mile River. The 10 Mile River is designated as a watershed that had an endangered coho run in spite of the data, not because of the data. And the runs of salmon in the 10 Mile are more closely aligned with the size of the runs are more closely aligned with the rainfall cycle than anything else. The most single important factor in regulating the levels of salmon, from what I understand, at least in the 10-mile, where a lot of work has been done, is how much rainfall we had 5 years ago, 3 to 5 years ago.
Okay.
And you know, the fishing here and out in front, the commercial fishing out here, has been restricted and eliminated not to protect the 10-mile river, but to protect the Columbia River, because there's Columbia fish out front.
Okay, we have some other calls coming in. I appreciate very much your calling in and your input. Sandy, do you have any comments?
I thank Brian for his comments. I agree with him that a lot of the sediment issues that we have are a product of things that were done 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And I do agree that I think that the practices that we're doing today are certainly going to make a difference over time.
A cumulative impact is a tough one. Okay, good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah. This is James Maddock out in Conte. You know, in terms of sedimentation, you know, you all have to look at your own driveway. I'd be willing to bet that in the Albion River water drainage area, there's probably as many as 5,000 miles of unpaved active driveways that are driven on during all weather. That's one issue. Also, I'd like to take exception with Rod Jones in terms of, MRC being able to come and respond to what is, he's the great civil libertarian who doesn't want anybody else to talk. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for your comments. We'll try to get in another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Linda. This is Beth Bosk. I'm one of the forest land defenders that went into the Clearbrook plan the weekend after Sandy Dean sent in seven followers and a road crew. And I must tell people, the way I found out that logging had commenced on this plan was that I was in court that day on a trumped-up violation of a probation charge that Mendocino Rebel Company had initiated. And the straw boss of that job was there also on some kind of traffic violation, I believe, and he was complaining to a friend that he had seven guys out there and no radio. And this is consistent with the kind of concern that MRC is showing for all of their workers. They're going in illy prepared, they're racing in illy prepared. The helicopter plan that the helicopter lifting that MRC did in the lower Kaizen plan lifted trees that were not felled by LP in the direction that they should have been felled in order to be helicopter lifted, and two guys from the choker setting crew were seriously injured during that operation, seriously enough to be taken to the hospital. Now, I want to tell you what I found when I went into the Clearbrook plan with another activist and with a camera.
We're running on the end of the show, though.
Well, how about expanding shows like these, Linda, so that...
That's not my decision. Right now, we have 2 minutes to the end of the show. So
we saw were 25 places at least where water was running down over a three-mile stretch of road that runs parallel to the Albion River. This is the Tom Bell Flat Road. We saw water running off of that slope, carrying sediment right smack into the Albion River, running across that road that had been used by heavy truck traffic. In one case, it was obvious that a tree had been cut and then hauled out. There was a 300-foot leg of that road that was a pond, and water was running from that pond into the Albion, all of it carrying sediment. The capture pond that Sandy had built below the huge slide on the road leading into Kaizen Gulch was not, I mean, it's beautiful, looks nice, but it is not capturing the sediment. It's not keeping it. That sediment is continuing on into the river.
Okay.
We went in, wait a minute, let me finish.
No, I'm sorry, Beth, we're at the end of the show.
River if they have hatched. And what this sediment does is the smaller, silty portions of that sediment
we're at the end of the show, and I'm going to have to cut off.
Larger particles.
Okay. Sandy, would you like to take 2 seconds to make any closing remarks?
Oh, I guess I just have to say that I appreciate the support that we're getting from people in the community who have taken the time to find out about what we're doing. It would be hard for me to respond to all the things that Beth just raised. We did put something in the paper about that, and I think we're going to put another letter in the paper this week in response to Beth's letter last week, and hopefully we'll try and be able to answer as many of the questions she's raised as possible.
Okay. Sandy Dean, president of Mendocino Redwood Company, appreciate your being on the show today. We have two lines are still ringing, and I'm sorry we can't get to everyone. Clearly, this is an issue that a lot of people have strong opinions on, and maybe we can revisit it here soon.
Linda, thanks for having me again.
Okay. Again, I'm sorry we can't get to all the calls. I encourage you to, if you feel public affairs shows like this should be expanded, that you let the program management know that so that can happen. So coming up next is Earth and Sky, followed by Gyro and the Wolfgang Gang. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling, and we'll be talking next week.